Our session is called Managing Projects and Portfolios in the Cloud. I'm Luke Humphrey. This is Alex Charters. We're both program managers in the product group. So we help design features for Project Online and then help ship them. We're going to do a couple things today. We're going to talk about the project and portfolio management lifecycle, all the way from defining your strategy, capturing your demand, selecting your investments based on their strategic alignment and cost and resource constraints, doing some planning to tee up execution and monitoring, which involve statusing tasks, business intelligence monitoring, things like that. So within this context, we're going to talk about several new features. They're going to be exclusively available on the cloud. So as we talk about this, we'll kind of weave in showing you those new features. I'm not going to name them now, so we can kind of keep them as surprises as we go along. So how many of the 10 people here have used Project Online before? How many are familiar kind of with this? Okay. So some of this will be review for you guys, but I think what you'll get out of it is learning about some of the new stuff that we're going to be offering. Some of the new stuff is already there, and then some of it's coming soon. So the first thing I just want to talk about is accessibility. So this question, these are some of the things we're thinking about now in terms of how we design features with accessibility in mind holistically. So really, this kind of sums up how we want to think about accessibility going forward. It's not just a checkbox for us. It's not just something a layer we put on at the end. We want to design features with accessibility in mind from the beginning. And with that, Project Client is now more accessible with improved support for screen reader, high contrast modes, and keyboard support. So if you are somebody who's visually impaired, Project Client is now much more easier to use. So I'll show you a couple things, illustrations of what this looks like. So the first one will be a video for the narrator improvements that we've made. So this is relevant if you're somebody who's visually impaired and you need to hear, you need to actually be able to understand the UI through audio versus visual. So if Alex wants to go ahead and play that. And it sounds like the audio is not working.
Row header task board, column header task name. Editable, auto schedule, column header task mode. Combo box, read only, one indicator. This task was completed on Monday 9/26/16. Row header task 3, submit bond and insurance documents. Column header indicators. Editable.
So somebody
graphical
who
indicator
needs this
green
to
minus,
understand what's
low.
Going on in a
row
project
header
plan.
Task
this
5, prepare and submit schedule
a lot of
values.
Us don't really think about
column
that,
header risk factor.
Super important
editable
project
4
and
days.
That
column header duration.
People who have
schedule question.
Special
plus
requirements
plus
such as
options,
visual impairment. They need things like screen reader, narrator, high contrast
modes
to work really well. Otherwise, they can't understand, you know, project schedules. So going back to the slides, high contrast mode, this is kind of a before and after. Before, we had a lot of challenges in terms of making this readable to somebody who could leverage this. So in both modes, we've improved that in the project client. And we've also done things with keyboard support in our team planner views and other key views. Okay, so that's accessibility. So now the rest of the presentation is really going to be demo focused. So I'm going to walk you guys through all of the phases of portfolio and project lifecycle management. And we are going to start with strategy definition. So this is the Project Online web app. It looks like this when you first get to it. We have projects, approvals, tasks, timesheets, issues and risks, resources to do resource management, and then we have the strategy section here. So the first phase in the portfolio lifecycle management is defining your business strategy, and you do that in the tool in the driver library section. So this is where you anchor your organization's strategy by defining business drivers that are actionable, measurable, and unique. And these business drivers will inform your investments, your projects that you'll invest in, based on how they align to the business drivers. So in this example, we have 7 business drivers here. Let's take a look at one of them, expanding into new markets and segments. So the properties of a business driver are pretty simple, but arriving at the business drivers that make sense for your org or your department, that's where a lot of work needs to go in terms of leadership and stakeholders getting together, deciding what these look like, and then prioritizing them. You can associate business drivers with departments, so you can have different business drivers at the local department level and also org-wide business drivers. This is kind of the heart of the business driver definition. These are the project impact statements. So this is when you fill out a business case for a project, you need to evaluate how it will align with your business strategy, and you do that on this 5-point scale from none to extreme. So a project can have no impact on a business driver, up to an extreme impact, and you define what each of these levels mean. Projects that have higher impact on your business drivers will be seen as more valuable or will yield more strategic value if you invest in them. So that'll come into play when we look at project selection a little bit later on. So this is your business driver definition page. Now, no two business drivers are created equal. So the next step in defining your strategy for your org or your department is to prioritize the business drivers. So you do that in the driver prioritization page. And I'll show you kind of what this looks like by starting a new one. So this is where leadership gets together, stakeholders get together, and they decide which drivers are most important, and they end up with a stack ranking of drivers in terms of priority order. So let's say we're going to do an FY17 consensus prioritization. And I'll just choose all the drivers I have here and save. I'll kind of show you how this works in the next screen. And I'll go forward to prioritize the drivers. So essentially you'll see a business driver on the left and then the rest of the business drivers on the right. And you'll need to compare the two on the 7-point relative priority scale. So I can say expanding into new markets and segments is extremely more important than improving customer satisfaction, or is extremely less important than improving customer satisfaction, or any place in between. So what you do is your leadership team kind of goes through this exercise together, and really the key thing that comes out of this that's super valuable, even if you didn't use any of the features in the rest of the tool, are the conversations that come out of this. So I've sat in a lot of meetings at Microsoft where, you know, HR, MSIT has gone through this to set their strategy for the next planning period. And it's really useful as a consensus builder for the leadership team, in terms of coming together and having transparency and a full understanding of their strategy, which will inform what they're going to be investing in across the board in the following planning period. So after you go through and rate each driver against each other driver, I'll close this and just open one that already has been done. So the final output of this exercise will be this, which is a prioritized list of drivers. So in this case, we see that the increased market share in existing markets is the most important driver for this org for the next planning period. And improving employee satisfaction is the least. So there's other problems there. Maybe this is Amazon's, I don't know. That was a joke. But essentially, by prioritizing your business strategy, not only does it force those hard conversations that gets everybody on the same page, when you then go to align your projects with your business drivers, you get a more accurate look at what the value of that project is. Because let's say, for example, a project had a strong impact on increasing market share in existing markets, and project B had, you know, a strong impact on improving employee satisfaction. Because as an org, you've said that this driver is much more important, that project would have more value if you were to invest in it. Now, there are other constraints you need to take into account, and we'll talk about those in a bit. So once you've defined your business strategy and you've prioritized it, and everybody in leadership is on board, Then you can look at demand capture. So I'm going to go to the Project Center. This is where all of the projects that have been added to this Project Online instance exist. So we see the projects grouped by workflow phases. And the Project Center also has other metadata for the projects, like who owns the projects, the type of project. It has these KPIs here. If I scroll over here, I can see what department these projects are in, what the cost of the projects are, expected benefits, et cetera. So this is a fully customizable view. It's really your kind of basic interactive dashboard for seeing what your demand looks like. To add a new project or to start a new, you know, demand request, you can go to this new button here, and here we have what we call enterprise project types. So these are really just templates for projects. Some examples are software development projects, marketing campaign projects. What you can do is you can define these and associate specific workflows for each of these types, and also specific forms based on the information you want to capture for, you know, a marketing campaign may be different from a software development project, etc. So let's say I want to start a new software development project. It takes me to this create form, which can also be completely customized. I'm going to go back and just open one that's already been filled out. So let's open up customer feedback engagement app. And I'll go to the overview page. So this is a software development project. This overview page tells me where the project is at in the workflow. So we're in the create phase and we're in the define stage. We can see more information about what the define stage means. If we go down here, we see the pages and forms available in this stage. Each stage, you can configure different pages and forms, what we call project detail pages, to be available based on where the project is at in the workflow. So here we have a project details page. I'm going to go ahead and click on that. And this is essentially a form that you can edit and fill out where you can capture things like, you know, what the total cost will be for this project, expected benefits, the business justification. This is completely customizable. You can configure it as it makes sense for the project types in your org. Another piece of the business case when you're capturing the initial demand is the strategic impact. So we already talked about defining the business drivers. Now you see the business drivers here in the context of this project. And the PM has rated the impact this project is expected to have on each of the drivers. So they're saying it will have extreme impact on the expanded to new markets and segments driver, and will have moderate impact on standardizing and streamlining cross-functional processes. So these ratings will inform the value and the priority of the project later when we look at the selection process. So the other piece of defining demand is resources. So let me switch over here. Looks like it's having a, there we go. So I'm going to pull up the project desktop now. And this is that project that we just looked at in the project desktop. So we see it already has a bunch of tasks and some generic assignments. That's because we've associated a schedule template with that project because there's a lot of standard things that you're going to do in a software development plan, and you don't want to have to type these in each time. So we're using a template here. And we have a generic resources assigned to some of these tasks. So we don't know the exact person or people who are going to be fulfilling these tasks, but we do know the type. So we need developers for some of the development tasks. So one thing you can do in here to specify the types of resources you're going to need is you can go to the resource plan view and you can add engagements. So I can say that I know I'm going to need a developer from, let's say, October to the end of the year. And let's say I'm going to need 3 developers. I can do that. And this is just a way to specify requirements that'll be factored in when you do an analysis that involves looking at your organizational resource capacity versus the demand that is being specified in each individual project. And I'll show you what that looks like in a bit. While I'm here, let me highlight another improvement that we've done in the client. So you see the timeline view up here. There's been a timeline created to highlight some of the key dates and phases in this plan. But what we see a lot is customers love this feature so much that they make these big, complex timelines. This one is pretty tame by comparison based on some of the timelines we've seen. So it becomes hard to actually parse and read the timeline, and the purpose of the timeline is actually to make it easy to communicate, you know, high-level dates and phases to stakeholders. So when you get a timeline that's too complex, it sort of undermines that. So what we've done is we've added the ability to create new tracks so you can separate out the timeline into subparts. So I'll show you what that looks like. We'll go to the Format tab, and I can add a new timeline bar. So let's say I want to separate out design and development from testing from the training and documentation stuff. So I can add a new timeline bar, and I'll actually add two of them. And when I move this aside, we'll see that we have these two timeline bars here, and I can add testing down here just by dragging. And these two tasks, which are associated with testing, get rid of that. So unit testing, integration testing, I'll put down there as well. And then the training and documentation bars I can drag down here. So now we have a much more readable, much more well-organized timeline view. And you can imagine if you have, you know, a timeline that's three times as complex as this, how well this will work in terms of organizing your timeline in a way that can be easily consumable by your stakeholders. Another thing you can do is label these different tracks. So if I click on bar label, I can label the first track as, you know, design plus development, the second bar as validation, and the third one as like supportability. And then you see the label show up here. So it's kind of a pretty cool enhancement to the timeline to make more complex timelines much more readable, especially when you have very logical higher level tracks. And what we've also done with the timeline is, before the timeline has been used to communicate what the plan is, now the timeline can also be used to communicate where you're at within the plan. So if you look at this design task here, you see half of it is shaded. It's showing you that that design phase is 50% complete. So if I wanted to, let's say, maybe training has gotten off to a great start, and the training phase is already a quarter done. I can just say it's 25% complete, and you see that training has now been marked as 25% complete. So not only can you now, I guess, communicate the plan, you can show the progress of the plan when you're, you know, copying, pasting these in status mails or putting them in decks, et cetera. Okay, so coming back to the web app here, so what we've done is now we've defined what our demand looks like. The next step is to figure out what we're going to invest in for the next planning period. So for that, I'm going to go to the portfolio analysis section. I'm just going to open up an existing portfolio. And you can include projects in here for the next planning period that you want to compete against one another for funding. And the things that you're gonna that are gonna factor into your selection process are what are the relative priorities of the those projects, and that's gonna be determined by their strategic value. And then you're gonna wanna also understand the cost of those projects and the resources that they require, and factor that into whether or not you wanna select that project. And we'll walk through exactly how that comes into play as we go along. So the next stage would be to prioritize projects. So here we have the rows are all the projects, so all the investments that you're considering. The columns are all of the business drivers. And remember, these are also prioritized, so they're not all equal. I think this one was the most important business driver as determined by leadership consensus. So here we see all the ratings. So acquisition target analysis is going to have a strong impact on expanding into new market segments. So the portfolio manager can look at this, make sure everything looks accurate. And when we hit next, or when we go to the next step, which is reviewing the priorities, what the tool is going to do is basically stack rank all the projects and give them a relative priority score based on how they align with your strategic objectives. So this is a really objective, methodical way to determine value that you can get out of an investment, rather than just sort of going by gut feel or, you know, using things like executive pet projects, stuff like that. So it really provides transparency and objectivity to your selection process. But essentially how it will work is the projects here that have higher impact on the drivers that you've said are most important will have a higher value. So let's take a look at what this looks like in this case when we calculate the relative priority values for these projects. Okay, so now this is a list of all the projects stack ranked by this relative priority score. So the e-commerce portal development project is the most important project, meaning it will yield the most strategic value. So the impact statements for this project against your drivers were the highest. Now, does that mean you're going to invest in e-commerce portal development? Maybe, because the other factor you need to take into account now is cost. Maybe this project is going to yield the most strategic value, but maybe it costs, you know, an exorbitant amount of money, or it requires a bunch of resources that you don't have, and so it doesn't make sense. So that's when we go into the next phase, which is analyzing your portfolio based on cost. So one of the first things we do, I'm going to go to the baseline here. We create a baseline that reflects what it would cost if you invested in everything. So you've captured all this demand. If you could do all of it, it would cost you, $22 million, but you'd yield the maximum strategic value, which is 100%. Now, in the real world, you can't always do everything. So let's say our budget for the next planning period was only $12 million. So I can put in $12 million as a constraint here, and I'll hit the recalculate button. And what it's doing now in the background is it's figuring out, given the $12 million budget constraint, which project should I invest in that will still yield the maximum value for the lowest cost? So really at the heart of this, it's trying to invest in stuff that gives you the most bang for the buck or the most value for your dollar. So if I look at this, here are all the selected projects. I do see that e-commerce portal development project is in, but if I scroll down, I see that these guys are out. So we're only investing $12 million, not $22 million. We can't do everything. These guys aren't going to be selected. So if we look at this knee and elbow pads project, we see it has somewhat of a high relative priority value, but it's also really expensive. So it's over $1 million. There aren't a lot of projects in here that are over $1 million. So that's going to contribute to it not being selected. Now, this is just sort of a starting place. You're going to have to pick projects for other reasons, or there may be other factors in here that the tool isn't taking into account. So what you can do is force in projects, and you can also force them out. So let's say we have to do knee and elbow pads. There's no way we're not doing that. It's a great project name. And let's say we have to do it for compliance reasons. So I'm going to force it in for a compliance reason and recalculate the portfolio now. So now what it's going to do, it's going to suggest which projects I should invest in based on not only the $12 million budget constraint, but also the fact that no matter what, knee and elbow pads needs to be in. So it'll tell you now knee and elbow pads has moved in. These projects have moved out as a result, and that also enabled software development plan, generic plan, to move in as well. So this tool, every time you hit recalculate, it's going to try to maximize your value for the money spent. So on the efficient frontier, we can see here, here's where we started our baseline, where we're doing everything and it's costing this much. Now we're down here where we're getting less value, but we're also spending a lot less. Another interesting view here is the strategic alignment view, where we can look at all of our business drivers. So let's look at increased market share in existing markets. The light blue is how important we said that driver was to our business. So we can see it's really important. The dark blue here is the cost that we're investing in that. So we see we're a little underinvested in the most important driver. So that may be a trigger for us understanding that the projects or investments that we're considering, maybe a lot of them don't actually move the dial on that driver. So we may want to go back and look at investments that might move the dial on that. So it's just a view to kind of help you figure out what your portfolio looks like. Now, once we've done the cost constraint analysis, we're going to have a subset of projects that are now selected. The next thing we can do is actually look at constraints from a resource perspective. So when I go to analyze resources here, what it's going to do, and this requirements detail view will illustrate this best, it's going to look at, for each project, what type of resources has it asked for. So this e-commerce portal development project asked for these types of resources, analysts, PMOs, and testers. And in a time phase manner, it'll show us how many of these types of resource has been asked for, you know, which month. And what the algorithm will do is we'll go through and, starting with the highest priority project, the project that'll give you the most value if you actually execute on it, it will look at your availability for these types of resources. So this shows you availability for all the different types of roles. So developer, this is basically saying we have 10 available in January, 10 in April, et cetera, et cetera. And it will fund the projects in priority order. So it'll fund e-commerce portal development, and it will subtract the requirements of that from the availability and then go to the next project and try to fund that. It'll keep doing that until we run out of capacity, and then it will start not selecting projects. So the first unselected project is audit tracking solution. We see that this project has asked for some trainers, and we have a deficit with our trainers here. So this project would not be selected. But like you can do in the cost constraint analysis module, you can force stuff in and it will recalculate, always trying to maximize the value, so always really favoring the highest priority projects, and then try to fund those based on your resource capacity. So there are a lot of other bells and whistles that we don't have time to go in here right now, but this is kind of the high level concept of how you would select projects more methodically, with more objectivity, by aligning projects to your strategic objectives, and then looking at them in terms of cost and resource constraints. So once you have you can go through a bunch of these scenarios, you can save them, you can compare them, you can talk about them with leadership, and do some iterative sessions on that. But once you're kind of happy with what you've got, you can actually commit these. And what the commit feature will do is it will write to each project and say, this project was selected on this date within the context of this portfolio scenario. And it can move the project forward in the life cycle from the selection phase to the plan phase. So I'll go back to the project center now. So let's say I committed those. Now all the projects that were in the selection phase would move to the plan phase. And the plan phase is where you have projects that have been selected, and now you need to prep them for execution. So you need to do things like start assigning real people to tasks and start filling out your schedule maybe in a bit more detail. So I'm gonna go back now to the project client. And let's say this project is now in the plan phase. So I am going to look at some of my development tasks and start to assign real people. So I've been approved for a developer on these tasks. What I can do is pull up our build team screen. And now I want a real developer to actually get assigned to these tasks and execute on them. So I can highlight developer here, match, and this will give me a list of all my developers. If I want to, I can click on them and see charts that show their resource availability to help me figure out who's available to do what. But let's say in this case, I've worked with Robin and Sarah before. They're great. I'm gonna go ahead and add them to my team. And I am going to assign this task to Sarah and this task to Robin. I'm gonna save the project. And then I'm going to go ahead and publish it. So I'm publishing these assignments so that Robin and Sarah can see that they're now responsible for these tasks. And once they're assigned the tasks, they can begin working on them and start tracking time. And Alex is going to show you some cool new ways on how they can actually report status and track time on these tasks.
Alrighty. So once again, my name is Alex Charters, also a program manager on the product group team. So we just wanted to showcase some of the new apps that have already come out or are coming out very soon. So the first app I'm going to show you guys and give you a tour of is the O365 Project Time Reporter. It's quite a mouthful. We usually just call it Time Reporter. So there are three main areas of the app. So basically, timesheet and tasks are where you're doing everything, and then settings are just where you're controlling what user you are. There are a couple other bells and whistles there. I'm going to show you guys those in the context of a scenario. So let's say I'm Sarah. I'm on the go. I've been working mobily, remotely, and I figure out that one of my tasks that was assigned to me is actually going to take, sorry about that, locked up. I figure out one of my tasks is actually going to take a lot more time than I thought it was going to. So when I jump into my tasks here, I'm provided with some pivots here at the top. So right now I can see all the current tasks that I have. I can see which ones are overdue. I can see brand new tasks, which ones are incomplete, and all the ones that are complete as well. And then just a full-on list of all the tasks. So I'm going to switch over to the incomplete tasks here. So just to go over what you're seeing on the screen here, essentially each line is a task that's pulling from the different projects for Sarah here. And so at the top of the line, we have the task name, and then right below it is the project, as well as the percent work complete so far. And then the two dates down at the bottom are the start date and end date for the task. The color, there's a bit of a color coding system. So red means that the task is currently overdue. You can see Sarah's really slacking here. She's got some overdue tasks from way earlier in the year. And it also says how many hours are remaining on those tasks. So like I said, red means overdue. Green means that these are current tasks. Purple means that they are completed. And when we go over to the completed screen here, we can see that percent work complete bar updates. So these are all 100%, so obviously the bar is fully green here. So I'm going to go over to all my tasks here. And we provide, obviously, if you're working on a lot of different projects, you're going to have a lot of different tasks. So, you know, you don't want to have to scroll through all of these. So we provide some options right down here in the interface for just quickly filtering by project or sorting the items. As well as a way, if I've just gotten presented with some new tasks, let's say by Luke here, that I can refresh my task list and pull in all the new ones. So I'm going to go ahead and refresh here and grab my new tasks. All right, so I've got all my new tasks here. I'm going to switch over to my incomplete pivot here. And we can actually see that one task that Luke just assigned us, the review functional specifications, very easy to say, from the project we just created, the customer feedback and engagement app. So one interesting thing you can actually do, like I said, is you can get into the task details here. So I figured out that for me to review this, I'm going to need a lot more than 8 hours because it's a really long document. So I can actually edit this. It's actually going to take me 2 days to get through it all. So then I can go ahead and send that status over, and then Luke will have the ability to review that. Oh, sorry about that. Try that one more time. So we're still working through a couple bugs on the Windows phone, but we did want to show it to you guys. We have the iOS one, which is the only one that's actually released right now. So the iOS one is out on the App Store, and effectively those status updates would go through. And like I said, we're still working on the Android and Windows one, but expect those very soon. So there's still a couple little glitches here and there, especially with the Wi-Fi in here.
Just curious, like how many people have Windows phones? Yeah. And then Android? And then iOS? Okay. Nice. So we got everybody covered, though.
Pretty representative. So yeah, you can update your percent work complete. You can change the remaining hours. You can add some notes there, all in the task details. So I'm going to go ahead and switch over to the iPhone to show the other main portion of the app, the biggest reason why you would get it, the timesheeting portion of it. All right, so the first thing you can notice is that the UI looks a little bit different here for the iOS device compared to the Windows phone. So each of them is using the native controls for each one. So they'll all look a little bit different, but the main screens are very similar. You know, it's not like you're gonna have to do different types of training or anything like that. But we did want to use the native controls that each manufacturer provides for us. So in this scenario, we're Robin here. And we want to fill out some time on our tasks, but we see it's not in our list right now. Right now, we just have the administrative tasks that our company has set up for us to always appear in your timesheet so that you never forget to fill those out. So we can go ahead and actually add in some conference hours here today. And then we're going to go ahead and save that. So the user has the ability to save their timesheet here, but if they prefer, once they've filled this out once and they're very confident, they can go ahead and just send that in, and then it saves it and sends it over to their approval manager. But first, we're going to add a row to our timesheet. So we're able to select from an existing assignment, let's say like the one that Luke just gave me. So we can see right here, we've got some tasks from the customer feedback and engagement app. We've been assigned two of them, and I know that I've been working on identifying modular or tiered design parameters. You can also change the different line classifications here as well. So we really want this to be a one-stop shop to submitting your timesheet. You know, we're trying to make sure that when you forget to submit your timesheet on a Friday, you can come back in and really have all your options of submitting that timesheet after you've already left work. So I'm gonna go ahead and add this task to our current timesheet. And so we can see right up here that it's the first one there. And we're going to go ahead and fill out some work that Robin has done on this. So we're going to add these on. We've got our conference hours here. And then we can see that it actually totals up at the bottom the different hours that we've input so far. And you might have noticed on the add screen, we can also add two other types of classifications here. We can add a personal task if you've been working on something that's not tracked in a project, but someone has asked you to do, or a non-project line as well. So that's going to be a similar row to the ones that we've already defaulted there, those administrative tasks. So we'll go back to our timesheet here. And you know, I'm feeling a bit risky here. I think I've accurately filled out my timesheet here. I'm not even going to give it a second glance. I'm going ahead and send that all the way over to my administrator. You can see that everything switches over to a read-only mode here. And then you realize, oh no, I actually worked on this Monday and Tuesday as well, and my project manager is going to kill me if these numbers aren't accurate. So what I can do is I can go up here to the top right, and you can see we have some different options here. You can obviously always refresh that data. You can get to your current time period timesheet. You can get a summary of it, or you can actually manage all of your timesheets in this app. So what we're going to do is we're going to head over to Manage Timesheets here, and you can see that Robin obviously has a lot of auto-generated timesheets. She can create them from here as well. This is just because she's included on so many projects from a huge date range. So what we're going to do is we're going to find that timesheet we just submitted. I believe it was 153. So you can see right here that she has officially submitted this timesheet. Normally it pulls in the manager as well as any comments if they've sent it back to them. That's when it would fill that out. And what we can actually do here is once we've selected this one, you notice in the top right that we actually have a recall option. So Robin can officially stop panicking and recall that timesheet. And so not only does she want to go back and fill out some more hours on that task, we can also configure some different options here. You know, maybe she wants to actually comment on the submission. She wants to explain what happened and why she only worked on something for 4 hours as opposed to maybe 8 hours in the day. What you can also do is, if you're currently tracking the amount of planned work, we can show that in the timesheet just so that when you're going to enter your time and you just know that you were following that planned work amount, and that's all you really want to fill out, you can see it just in a nice read-only row below your timesheet. So once we've got those turned on, we can go back to our timesheet here. And so for this project, we don't actually have any planned time there, but right in those gray boxes is where you'd find those. Looks like I forgot to save my timesheet from earlier, so I'm just going to double check that. And then when Robin goes to send it, since we added the submission comments on, now she can comment on her timesheet as well. She can maybe apologize. And then she can go ahead and save that. And now her timesheet is submitted again. You'll notice that we also add some filtering on this screen as well. You know, it's a little unrealistic to think that she's only working on one task, especially when you have a lot of cross-project initiatives going on. So we provide some different tools here to filter by the different projects she's on. So if we just wanted to see just that one task, we can do that on this timesheet as well. You can also easily switch between timesheets. And then when we go back to the manage view here, like I said, these are all auto-generated, but if you actually wanted to create those, you can do those here as well, simply by hitting this click to create right there, and you can create timesheets for your future work as well. So that's pretty much a high-level overview of the new Time Reporter app. Like I said, the iOS one is out now. You can actually search for it on the App Store. Like I said, it's a bit of a mouthful, but it is Office 365 Project Time Reporter. We promise we don't put that huge name on your home screen. It just says Time Reporter. I just wanted to give a quick demo of those. And we're going to hold the questions to the end, and you guys can actually come and play with the apps on both of the devices if you want. And that'll be the end of the Time Reporter demonstration.
Great. So, yeah, you can imagine it's going to be a lot easier for users to update their time on native apps versus having to go to the web on a mobile device. So that's really cool. Okay, so let's talk about another way to assign tasks. I've shown you that you can assign tasks to generic resources. Like we saw, these were two were assigned to a developer, and then me as the PM, I went in and assigned them to Sarah and Robin. But another way to do this is you can actually just assign tasks to team resource pools. So I have two team resource pools assigned to this task here, iOS Developers Corporate and iOS Developers Remote. So why would I use these? Essentially, if I have a pool of people who have a certain skill set or are going to be able to do a specific type of task, but I don't care who does the task, I can create team resource pools. So in this case, I need this task done called develop code, or let's actually assign these guys to develop more code, if only it were that simple. And I need this task done, but I don't care who does it, but I know that people from our corporate office or our remote office can do it. So I just want to put it out there and allow whoever has time to pick it up to do so. So what I'm going to do is assign that out, and I'm going to publish the plan again. And what's going to happen is these team pools, iOS Developers Corporate and Remote, will have team members that include Sarah and Robin, and they can see these on their tasks view in the web. So let me pull up a new browser. And I'll log in as Sarah. Firefox, nice. So I'm logged in. Actually, it logged me in automatically. I'm logged in as Sarah. If I go to my tasks, I can see that Sarah has a lot to do. But Sarah's a rock star, so she has all of this under control. And she wants to see if there are any team tasks available that she can help out with. So I go to Add Row, Add Team Tasks. And then here I can see that Develop More Code task that was assigned to that team of iOS developers, either remote or in corporate. So what Sarah can do is she can actually just say, okay, I can help out with this task, and she can select it and click assign to me. Now, in the past with team tasks, when Sarah did this, that team task would go away, so nobody else could then work on it. The improvement we made now is that that team task will stay there. So if I then log in as Robin, so I'm going to do that in a different browser here. I think this is Robin. I'm going to go to tasks. Robin also has a lot going on. She's also a rock star, though, so she can take on even more. So she's going to go to add team tasks. And even though Sarah has already signed on to help out with develop more code, we see that the team task stays there. So several people can help out with that task. So that's a new improvement we've made for team tasks based on a lot of customer feedback. The other improvement we made, I sort of already showed you, and that is the fact that you can assign multiple team tasks to tasks. So now we can say that corporate iOS developers can work on this task, or remote developers. I don't really care who. So multiple team assignments, and then the team assignments stays assigned to the task so that multiple people can pick up and help out with those tasks. Those are the two team task improvements that we've made for Project Online. Another improvement we've made around assigning and sharing is the ability to give access to external users. So if you want to work with a vendor, a customer, or anybody who's not part of your tenant, you can now do that, and Project Online will support it. So if I want to share my Project Online instance with somebody who has an MSA account, a Microsoft account, I can do that. So I want to share it with me and at my live address. So I'll do that. And I can share that out. And then I can even go into the plan and add this external user, Luke Humphrey, me, to the team, and even assign Luke tasks. So now if I go back here and I want to log in as Luke, let me do that by going to Firefox, bring a new window. And I'll log in to the tenant using my live account or my MSA account, which really can be any email address. You can hook up a Gmail account to your MSA account. So I'll enter my password here. So again, this is a user who's not in the tenant. Now I can see I actually get to log in and I have a task assigned to me. So now it's really cool. We have external user support in Project Online. You can work with people who aren't members of your tenant, vendors, customers, etc. All right, so the last thing I want to show everybody is reporting. So now we've been in the manage phase. We're assigning tasks out. Projects are being executed. Now we want to measure and see how we're doing. So to do that, we now have two new reporting apps that are really powerful that I will show you after I reopen the browser. So we have one for iOS, and we have one in the Office Store that you can install on your Project Online web app. So let's try that again.
Pulling Luke from the
Okay. All right, cool. So this is the Office app. So this is something you can add with a couple clicks to your Project Online instance and access via the web. Now, the really powerful, cool thing about these reports or this app is that you don't have to do anything really to set them up. So what we've done is we've worked with a partner, and the app comes preloaded with a bunch of best practice reports that will work for a lot of customers without really any configuration. So let's take a look at what some of the reports look like. So this is the overview page. So we can see we have project cost versus baseline cost charts here. We can see projects broken down by their enterprise project type, software development project, et cetera. Down here, we can see a list of the projects and some key KPIs around how the schedule is doing for those projects, how the work is doing, are there work overruns, are there cost overruns, and then some other key level metrics here. So we can see that for all the projects. Now the charts are interactive, so if I want to drill into one of these, let's say the biothermal ear project, I can just click on it, and now I can see more details about that project. Slipping tasks, missed deadlines, work that's in the past, issues and risks assigned to that project. So I can see who the troublemakers are on that project, resources with task discrepancy. We can see that, you know, Molly has some work that's in the past. I can go down here and see more details about problems with this project, so cost overruns, work in the past, issues and risks. So all of this has been pre-configured for you. You don't need to do anything except install the app. Other views, we can look at executive summary for this project. So if you want just a quick summary that maybe you can copy and paste and do a PowerPoint, we have a page that's pre-configured. You don't have to do anything. You just click on it, and you have, you know, some of the high-level metrics for the project right there at your fingertips. And then if you want to look at all the details of the project by task, looking at some of the metrics like schedule issues, cost issues, work issues, you can do that here as well. So this is the Office app. I'm going to show you the iOS app in a second, but I'll show you just a few ways you can customize these reports. So if I go to the options here, you can filter projects that are included in each of these dashboards. In this case, we're looking at this year's projects. And so I've filtered the projects by, you know, start and finish date filtering. You can also filter what the pages look like for each of these sections. So here we have a section layout option where I can go up to 3x3. And then in each section, we have these libraries of reports that you can choose from. So all you have to do is click on these. No other configuration is really required. And we have these for projects, tasks, resources, issues, and risks. You can customize how you want each of these to look. And then when you load them in the iOS app, it'll mirror what you're seeing in the web here. So other things you can do are filtering. If you add custom fields, so most everybody is going to use custom fields for their projects, those are automatically available in these reports when you add them. So the real power of this is that you don't have to do much, and you get all these great best practice reports. Of course, if you have more custom requirements, we have really advanced BI features, and Mike McLean did a session on that earlier today that you can view online. So if you want to get into more custom reporting using Power BI, Excel, et cetera, I encourage everybody to look at that session online. Let's take a look at the iPad app now, and we'll look at some of the resource reports. So here's the iPad app. And basically, it's just looking at, you connect it to your Project Online instance, and any customizations you make to the web, they just show up here. So same UI. Let's take a look at what we can do with resource reporting. So if I click on resources, here I can see resources by demand versus capacity. So we can see that Robert Lyon here is really in demand, but he doesn't have enough capacity. So we can see sort of discrepancies like that. Top resources with issues. We can see all the resources down here and some key metrics on them. And then we even have this availability view where you can see resource availability by month per resource. So all this is available on an iPad or in the web. Okay, so we've shown you a lot of features now, but what if you have an idea for a feature that you haven't seen that you think we should invest in? We've now integrated our user voice site, and Alex will talk about exactly what that is. We've integrated links to that in the apps. So if I'm using the product either the web or the client, and I think of a feature and I want the product group to consider it, I want to see if other people are thinking about that feature, I can click on that smiley face and then click on here that says send a suggestion. And this brings us to the user voice site, and Alex can talk about exactly what that means.
So if you stop by the booth, hopefully I've told you something about user voice because I'm a big champion of it. Effectively, it's a feedback and suggestion hub where anyone can go in, place a new idea they have, or vote on an idea that's already there. And I know you're thinking this is probably just going down some black hole and we never really check this, but this actually goes straight to my inbox at work. I have my own user voice folder that I read like first thing in the morning. I grab my coffee and I start going through all the different comments and all the different suggestions. So every time there's someone commenting, I get a daily summary. I can go and see like what's been gaining the most votes lately. So let me just show you a little bit what that looks like. So right here, just this quick paragraph, I recommend reading it, but it's effectively giving you a quick overview as well as some of the rules that we've set up for user voice. So there are a couple different ways you can set it up. We've said that every user gets 10 votes, and you can split up those votes however you'd like between the ideas, and you can actually allocate up to 3 votes. So if you see something and you're like, yes, 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 we need that, you can put 3 votes towards it. And then once all your votes are used up, you get the votes back once we've closed them or given them certain statuses. So right here we have a link. We share the same definitions with the Visual Studio team because they advised us a lot on how to set this instance up. So if you were to click here, you'd be able to see our different statuses and what they mean as we define them in the product group. Or you can actually just filter here and you can see when we've responded to different issues. And one of the great things about user voice, and I think this is actually pretty important, that we try to tackle ideas that we just know that we're never gonna get into. So we don't want people who really want this one feature, really want this one connector, and maybe it gets a lot of votes, and you know, we don't wanna just sit there and not respond to it. So we'll even go in and be as transparent as we possibly can and say, unfortunately, this is not something we're looking to invest in, and then we'll decline it, and then basically that frees up all those votes and everyone can now, oh, I gave 3 votes to that because I really wanted it. Unfortunately, the product group said, oh, we can't do that. I'm going to go give my 3 votes to something else. So it's super simple. You can see over here on the right, we've got a bunch of different categories that you guys can choose to place your feedback in. We have one for the client. We have one for online. And then we kind of just have some high-level areas around, let's say, your admin settings or the how it looks and how it feels and how the UI is. So we've got lots of suggestions right now. If we go to some of our top ones, you can see that we try to respond to some of our top ones here. And you can see we've even completed 7 ideas so far. So we've done a little bit better around notifications for resource engagements. And we'll even go to the small ones. You know, we don't want to just leave these ideas out there. We want to give our official statuses on them. And when you see this Microsoft project team, that is actually me behind my computer typing out an official statement on where we are with the feature. So I highly recommend that you point your users towards this if you're helping them get set up and they say, oh, we really want it to work like this. And normally you'd say, unfortunately, there's no way to configure it like that. Maybe we can help alleviate that pain and add that as a scenario. So if you had something around the timeline, you can see that when you start entering an idea, that you can, it automatically shows the existing ideas around it. So that's super important. It makes it a little bit more of a headache for me if there are 12 ideas all saying the same thing. And I'll actually go in and merge them when I find ones that are identical. But it's pretty important to just check that there's those existing ideas out there. But if there's not, you can always just post the new idea. So there's actually a link in the online client as well. Let's see if we still have one of those windows open. So right here, this is also a link. Go straight to our user voice again. Like I said, we're really trying to prioritize the feedback placed in there. We're really trying to have one hub for everyone to submit their feedback as opposed to having all these different ways to submit feedback. So we've got the link there, and we've got it in our client as well. And yep, if you ever just want the direct URL, it's microsoftproject.uservoice.com. And we highly recommend checking it out and see where we are at on some things, because we've got some things in progress, under review, or things that we've completed recently.
Okay, so I know I would have loved something like this for software products that I've used over the last 20 years. I mean, a lot of them, you just don't even know how to get in touch with the product team. You have to go on some forum, and you don't know if it's ever seen again. So I think it's really cool that there's this 360-degree feedback loop, and you can kind of see what everybody else cares about, so you can understand if it's just you or if there's really a broader need for something. So that's really great. Okay, so... This one? Okay. All right, so that's pretty much it. This includes a summary of all the new stuff. Some of the stuff is already available in Project Inline, and some of it's coming soon. But you know, all the Time Reporter apps, the portfolio dashboard apps that we showed you on the web and in iOS, those team task improvements, making it easier to have sort of self-service task assignments. External user support, adding vendors, customers, et cetera, easily to your tenant, even if they aren't a member of the tenant. Those timeline improvements, really breaking up complex timelines into separate tracks and then showing progress on tasks versus just the plans. The accessibility in Project Desktop, which is super important for people who need that. And then that community-based user voice forum. So we obviously didn't have time to go in depth with everything. This is really just kind of a high-level overview and then highlighting some of the new stuff. There are other sessions that were at Ignite. If you didn't get a chance to already check these out, they'll be available online. So feel free to reference that. And that is it. Thanks, everybody, for coming. We appreciate it. If you have any questions, we want to just have people come up here, if you don't mind, and we'll just kind of take them offline. So thank you.